Blog Talk Radio.
Someday I'll have me a chauffeur and a block long limousine, EO11. EO11. Someday I'll have me a penthouse, stacks and stacks of Bowling Green, EO11. EO11. It's all a state of mind, whether or not you find that place down there or heaven. In the meantime, EO11. 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 Show me a man without a dream, and I'll show you a man that's dead, real dead. Once I had me a dream, but that dream got kicked in the head. Dream dead. I nearly had me that chauffeur and that block-long limousine, EO11, EO11. I nearly had me that penthouse, all them stacks of Bowling Green, EO11, 11. Some judge is gonna say I'm putting you away for 4 score years and 7. In the meantime, EO11, 11.
Ooh, doo 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 ski doo doo squee doo doo.
America is a land of heroes, a place where greatness is born, where destinies are forged, and where legends come to life. This is the home of Thomas Edison and Teddy Roosevelt, of many great generals, including Washington, Pershing, Patton, and MacArthur. This is the home of Abraham Lincoln, Frederick Douglass, Amelia Earhart, Harriet Tubman, the Wright brothers, Neil Armstrong, and so many more. This is the country where children learn names like Wyatt Earp, Davy Crockett, and Annie Oakley. This is the place where the Pilgrims landed at Plymouth and where Texas Patriots made their last stand at the Alamo. The American nation was carved out of the vast frontier by the toughest, strongest, fiercest, and most determined men and women ever to walk on the face of the earth. Our ancestors braved the unknown, tamed the wilderness, settled the Wild West, lifted millions from poverty, disease, and hunger, vanquished tyranny and fascism, ushered the world to new heights of science and medicine, laid down the railroads, dug out the canals, raised up the skyscrapers. Our ancestors built the most exceptional republic ever to exist in all of human history, and we are making it greater than ever before. This is our glorious and magnificent inheritance. We are Americans. We are pioneers. We are the pathfinders. We settled the new world. We built the modern world, and we changed history forever by embracing the eternal truth that everyone is made equal by the hand of Almighty God. America is the place where anything can happen. America is the place where anyone can rise. And here, on this land, on this soil, on this continent, the most incredible dreams come true. This nation is our canvas, and this country is our masterpiece. We look at tomorrow and see unlimited frontiers just waiting to be explored. Our brightest discoveries are not yet known. Our most thrilling stories are not yet told. Our grandest journeys are not yet made. The American age, the American epic, the American adventure has only just begun. Our spirit is still young. The sun is still rising. God's grace is still shining. And my fellow Americans, the best is yet to come.
Gotta believe it. James Bostic here, Conservatives Perspective on the Patriot Nation Radio Network, Tuesdays and Thursdays, and you never know, it might be a Monday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday show sneak in there, it's hard to say. But we do it relatively regularly on Tuesdays and Thursdays, 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, I think this is Tuesday. It's like Groundhog Day. I saw a great meme this morning. You guys, if you know the movie, it's Bill Murray plays a not a particularly nice guy as a weathercaster. He's kind of self-centered and kind of vain. And anyway, he gets stuck. He gets stuck in the same day over and over and over and over until he gets the day right. And that day happens to be Groundhog Day. And it's like, and that was one of the things in the movie. He starts making his peace with this. He understands that, you know, this. He doesn't know how long this is going to go on, but he's stuck there. And it's Groundhog Day, again, when he did his report. And that's what it's like here. It's quarantine day again. And we're living in it. Our guest was on the board, but apparently he's taking a powder on us. Could be back at any time. I'm sure something came up. our guest tonight, scheduled, was Mr. Chauncey Brown of the Third. He's host of Conservative Talk Radio, a political commentator and news correspondent. He was going to be joining us in the first part of the program to talk about current events in our political climate as it exists today, but it would appear that he has changed his mind. Something must have happened. He was on the board and then he dropped off, so it's hard to say. Good to be here with you anyway. You know, this kind of stuff happens in the radio business, and it used to be I would get pretty wrapped around the axle about it, and internally, although you may not be able to hear it out here, yeah, I am. This kind of stuff grates at me a little bit. It always has, because I want things to go the way I want them to go, by God, and that ought to be enough right there. And sometimes it doesn't work out that way. And like we have now, not dead air, just getting a drink. So there are some things, though, there are some things that we can talk about, and I intend on it. It seems to be bothering me more Oh, well, guess we kept him waiting a little too long. He is an extremely busy man, and that's how that goes. And that's okay, Chauncey. We appreciate you doing whatever. Well, I suppose so. On hold for 5 minutes. When you plan a show with me, I'd like to know the exact time I am going on there. I never keep my guests waiting longer than 1 minute. Ooh, well, Chauncey, whoopsie. I am sorry. I am extremely busy and do not have time to waste. Apparently not. God bless, Charlie. Chauncey. So we'll take care of that. So, that's how that goes. But, you know, some of these guys have their own ways of doing things, and I'm the same way, and apparently Chauncey is no exception to that. Ah, well. It happens that way. I'm just answering him back. I'm sorry it's taking a little bit of time. Great to be here. Well, that takes care of that. You can't let them take your joy. So here's what we're going to talk about. Great stuff from Dennis Prager. And again, I have said all along, continue to do so, that the arithmetic just doesn't match up. Never has. Never has. And according to the New York Times China Virus report, as of Sunday, there were 35,676 China virus deaths in the United States. Now, of those deaths, 18,690 of them were in the New York metropolitan area. Now, what does that mean? The New York metropolitan area is generally regarded as consisting of the five boroughs of New York City, the five New York State counties surrounding New York City. So that's Nassau, Suffolk, Westchester, Rockland, and Orange, and the more populous parts of New Jersey and Connecticut. And that means more than half, 52% of all deaths in America have occurred in the New York metropolitan area. Let me say that again. More than half, 52% of all deaths in America have occurred in the New York metropolitan area. Now, what makes this statistic particularly noteworthy is that the entire death toll for 41 of the other 47 states is 7,661. So, in other words, while New York has 52% of all China virus deaths in America, 41 states put together have only 21% of the China virus deaths. And all the 47 states other than New York, New Jersey, and Connecticut have less than half. Now, let's imagine if the reverse of that were true. Imagine that Georgia and North Carolina, two contiguous states that, like the New York metro area, have a combined total of 21 million people. Let's say that Georgia and North Carolina had 18,690 China virus deaths, while New York had 858 deaths, which is the number of North Carolina and Georgia combined. That's kind of confusing, but what they did is they just switched the numbers. Do you think the New York metro area would close its schools, its stores, its restaurants, and small businesses? Would every citizen of the New York area, with a few exceptions of those engaged in absolutely necessary work, be locked in their homes for months? Would New Yorkers accept the decimation of their economic and social lives because North Carolina and Georgia, or even more absurdly, Colorado, Montana, or what the rest of most New Yorkers consider flyover country, if they had 18,960 deaths while New York had a mere 858? Well, that's possible. But I would say that anyone with an open mind assumes that New Yorkers would not put up with ruining their economic and social lives and putting tens of millions of people out of work because of coronavirus deaths in North Carolina and Georgia, let alone Montana, right, or anywhere else. And I think we would all agree with that. Even more telling, the media, which controls American public opinion more than any other institution, including the presidency and Congress, but not churches and synagogues, which is why they loathe evangelicals and Catholics and Mormons and Orthodox Jews. They wouldn't be fixated on shutting down the country if it were killing far more people in some southern Midwestern mountain or Western state rather than in New York City. The media is based in New York City and New York centered. New York is America to them. The rest of the country, with a partial exception of Los Angeles, which is also a media center, and Silicon Valley, the rest of us were an afterthought. So again, when we look at this and we look at the numbers, it seems to me that this thing has been from the very beginning, for whatever reason, it seems to me that there has been some kind of narrative, there's been some kind of attempt to make this something more dangerous than it is. I'm not negating the danger. People have died from it. We just talked about how many have died from it. But if we look at these numbers of deaths, and I hate it, it just sounds so cold-hearted to do that. But if we look at them dispassionately, which we got to do, we've got people dying in this country in greater numbers over many other things. And the thing that I think look how quickly people fell into line with this stuff. Number one, there are large numbers of folks out there in the country that believe the establishment media is fundamentally telling them the truth. They look to them for information, maybe even a certain amount of reassurance. I don't think you're getting it, but that's how that is. And you see what they're getting. Okay, we've had news networks lying. We've had them showing, they've selectively edited footage of hospitals, and they have things now. And of course, it was money motivated, but excuse me. You have anyone who died was dying of the China virus. Now, Pennsylvania in the last couple of days has backed off of that, and they have removed 200 folks from having that listed as their cause of death. They've removed that as a cause of death for 200 people. And the investigations are taking place, and they're looking into this. And apparently there is a money trail here, and they're paid X amount of money if they have the China virus. They're paid even more if they have to implement ventilators, and so they're everybody's dying of China virus so they can get this money at the hospitals. And they've got to have revenue because most of these places have banned non-essential procedures. All right? Hip replacement's not necessarily essential, but they go on all the time. They're essential to the guy that's got to have it, but Governor Gretchen Whitmer, maybe not so much. It's just a complicated picture. I mean, it really is to me. You have these people in the media that are making it out to be much more than it is. You know, New York was on the verge of collapse. Bodies were being stacked up outside the morgues. There's burying people in mass graves. The situation is so severe. The hospitals are so overloaded that the president sent the U.S. Navy hospital ship Comfort to New York Harbor to help pitch in. In 3 weeks, the hospital ship treated 179 people. Doctors and nurses are committing suicide, throwing themselves out the windows. Governor Cuomo comes on and says, fundamentally, I need every single ventilator in the United States sent to New York. Regardless of the fact that he had 20 or 30,000 of them in a warehouse that they didn't even need or use. I don't know if it was intentional, but I think that there were the virus itself. You know, we had Claire Lopez on last week, and she was very precise in what she said about that. And, you know, most likely the cause is that it came from the Wuhan Institute, but probably not through intent, probably just through poor security protocols. And then it was exploited. First, it was exploited by the Chinese government. When they figured out what in the world was going on there, they put a lockdown on that province. No flight from Wuhan going to anywhere else in China was permitted. Immediately, there was a travel ban instituted by the Chinese government. Now, that travel ban did not include travel to foreign nations, so you could take a flight from Wuhan anywhere in the world. And there's a lot of trade commerce between the fashion houses in Italy and that part of China as well, because that's where the manufacturing goes for the designs, for the bags, for the frocks. And there's a lot of interchange between Chinese folks and Italian folks in the northern part of Italy where this virus hit the hardest. Got to hit the mute button. And we're back. So one of the reasons that it was so terrible in Italy and that all this stuff was happening was because it was unrestricted travel between China and Italy. And you got a lot of Chinese people coming over here that are in that business. And so right there we see, if the Chinese government won't allow these folks from Wuhan access to the rest of China, but they'll turn them loose on the free world, someone must have been pretty quick on their feet to think to exploit this. Someone high up in the Chinese government, because, you know, they call it the Virology Institute or Infectious Disease Institute or whatever it is, to give it some kind of a collegial or academic appearance. It's run by the Chinese military, as Claire told us. The Chinese military runs that, and the reason it's there is they're looking to weaponize things. Cooties. They're weaponizing cooties. And I don't know if this particular cootie was as lethal as they want it to be. Was it still in the fine-tuned stages? I don't know. Because, again, the arithmetic does not support. But then again, look at what happened. Did it have to be that lethal? If we judge the effect of what happened here in the United States with this panic button pushing that went on, this vast overreaction, this vast overreach, maybe it didn't have to be that lethal. Maybe it just had to be lethal enough, which apparently it was, because it brought this country almost to a standstill. So we have this accident where it is released. It probably spreads fast throughout the city because the wet markets are right there in Wuhan, and Chinese are not the most hygienic of people. So they get it. The stronger ones, you know, they make it, and they travel, and they spread it out. At some point when this is happening, the Chinese government understands what's going on, and they decide we're going to lock down Wuhan, except, you know, we'll send it out. So you have this first opportunity to exploit what's going on by the Chinese government, and I think that's what they've done. I think it was a surprise to them, a happy surprise. They did not calculate on this, but it did happen, and so this is the way that they were able to kind of deflect it and move it out into the rest of the world. It's their responsibility. This thing came out of the institution. It was manufactured, as Claire Lopez told us last week. So then he gets to the United States, and we see this thing, we see this contagion run through Europe, I guess Italy primarily being the gateway. And then we see panic. We see at first the World Health Organization saying, no, it's not that big deal. It's, you know, it's all good. And then we see the World Health Organization saying, we're all going to die. And we've also seen now that the World Health Organization throughout this whole thing has done nothing but run cover for China. The Wuhan Health Organization, maybe. The president was absolutely right to defund them. But now we get into the United States. And the political environment, the political climate in the United States, in a lot of ways, is ripe for this. You know what kind of people are there on the left. Judgmental people. You know, they're intolerant people. They like to judge. They like to condemn. You know, and they're really good at condemning the rest of us. So then all of a sudden everybody starts pushing the panic button here. A lot of cooler heads, a lot of people doing the numbers. I'm not saying this is fluff. I'm not saying it's a hoax. Just like the president did not say it was a hoax. The people that have died from this thing are just as cold and stiff today as they're going to be tomorrow, and that's forever. That's for all eternity. It's real. Just like the flu was real. Just like the 60,000 people who were killed in the last measurable flu season are just as cold and still as they were when they died, and they are not coming back, and that is forever. But we did not shut the country down. See a lot of memes, you know, that try to address the restlessness of the American people. And they start going to their state capitals. And they start talking to their state leaders, their governors. The financial crunch, the pain that's going on here is just, you know, it to me it's immeasurable. I talk about it a lot, and I cannot imagine. I've been broke. I know what it's like to be broke. I really do. It's hard. It's tough. There was a time in, not so long ago, man, when I was really struggling. There was a time in my life I was constantly 2 to 3 months behind on my car payment for a year. I mean, things were just crushing me. And it generates a misery and a depression like nothing I've ever known. And it pushes people and it breaks them. They start drinking. They start doing drugs. They get depressed. They hurt. They act out. Maybe they kill themselves. Maybe they drink themselves to death. Maybe they OD. Maybe he shoots the wife, then himself. Or maybe she does it. Maybe she kills the kids, then herself. Because people are at the end of their freaking ropes at the insistence of the government who pushed the panic button on this deal. And now Nancy Pelosi says, well, I don't think we're going to come back in May. This whole virus thing's pretty dangerous, and we don't want to. You know what? Maybe it's a good thing old boy got. It might be good old boy just decided to bail on us anyway. That's cool. but it infuriates me. Okay, all these things happen. All these barbershops closing up. All these restaurants closing their doors. All these nail salons, these tanning beds, these gyms, these parks, these places of worship. Have been closed fundamentally at the point of the government spear. Why do I say that? Well, what would happen if you go against the edicts of the government? What's going to happen? The centurions are going to come, aren't they? And at the point of the government spear, they're going to close you up, and they're probably going to haul you off to jail. Through no fault of their own. These people didn't mismanage their businesses and go under. They didn't have their location catch fire. There wasn't a flood. It wasn't an act of God. They weren't robbed. They didn't mismanage their business. It was shut down at the point of the government spear. Whether that was the city government or your county commissions or whatever ordinance is there, your state government. Yeah. Donald Trump did not shut down Michigan any more than he shut down New York or Virginia or North Carolina or Georgia or Texas or Oklahoma or Kansas or Ohio or Pennsylvania. Your governors did that, citizens. Your government, your mayor. Some of these Democrat mayors now are starting to say you can't open carry in states where that's your constitutional right. They're saying you can't buy a gun, can't buy ammo, you can't carry a gun. Why? Because this is an opportunity for power. This is the second point of exploitation. I have seen people that I know personally on social media cheer, post articles with approbation about Christians being arrested for going to church. People I know well. People I've known for a long time. I don't think it's necessarily because they hate Christians. Although it's easy to hate Christians the way that we're vilified in the press and in the media and by the left. And, you know, a steady diet of garage bands, beer gardens, national government radio, and Starbucks. That stuff, you know, that's your people. That's the demographic there. There's a meme I posted my page before. I came on the air, and you know, I said you're subtly. Let me check that out. You're being conditioned. You're being conditioned to think that people that stand for their freedoms are selfish. And this is just another thing for the vaginal helmet wearing woke scolds to jump on, and they will. They're going to glom right onto this. Shame on you. Matter of fact, it happened to me yesterday on my page. guy I've known since he was a wee little nipper, basically shaming me for not staying inside and sticking with the program. I'm sorry, at its core, and the way that this thing has resonated for me from the moment that these draconian policies have been put in place is how are we going to get this stuff back? I see small changes forever. I went to the post office today to pick up a letter, and they have erected plexiglass shields up at the counters with this thing that's like the Postal Service hokey pokey. You know, you step up, you place your package down, you step back, then they step up, take the package, invite you to step up, turn yourself about. I mean, Jesus. Is that going to change? Are those policies going to change? Are we still going to have to go? Are there still going to be little arrows in the grocery store showing you which way to go? Are there still going to be little six-foot interval dots on the floor forever? Great Caesar's ghost, man. Yeah, like I said, it's working out pretty good. Old boy didn't show up. That's all right. But the threats, I mean, these threats transcend. Any threat that this virus has. Again. Let's just look at it from the simple perspective of trading places. The New York metropolitan area, and we discussed that what all that encompasses, which is a very small part, a very small part, you know, a minuscule part, a practically microscopic part of the United States. Although our financial center is located there, a lot of our media is located there, it's an important part of the United States. But geographically speaking, it is a very small part. And that very small part of the United States is responsible for half of all the China virus deaths in America. Think on that. And they want the strict, overbearing, draconian policies that we have seen in New York in place for the rest of the country. Somebody explain this to me. Where is the science behind this? What collection of fact or extrapolation of a collection of facts can you show me that says this is cool? Well, it's a rhetorical question. Of course you can't. But here we are. People hurting. People crying the blues, man. I mean hurting. And in the places where the citizens are raising their voices, they're seeking redress from their government, which is one of our guarantees in the Constitution, something about peaceable assembly. I think it's right there in the first one. Police in the North Carolina Capitol said that protesting was a non-essential activity. Let's say we're arresting you. Oh, son, do you know anything about the British when they were here? Apparently not. But you have these people. You have these people that are doing this crazy stuff, and they're operating from the perspective that the Constitution can and apparently can easily be suspended in times of crisis, and that's not the case. That's not the case. I think what we'll do, we'll take a little break right now, and when we come back, we're going to talk about... As I was speaking earlier, the China virus casts a pretty big shadow, and there's a lot of other things going on, and we need to kind of be mindful of those. We will be back with more of a conservative perspective right after this. As soon as I find something. Man, I do this all the time. I should have been better prepared. Ah, well. That's just how it goes.
I call you up and ask if you'd like to go with me and see a this out too much, I'm going to tell you a little bit about this so that you understand what I'm talking about. Down there we have a plant that grows out in the woods and the fields. Looks something like a turnip green. Everybody calls it poke salad. Poke salad. Used to know a girl lived down there and she'd go out in the evenings and pick her a mess of it. Carry it home and cook it for supper. Cause that's about all they had to eat. They did all right. Down in Louisiana, where the alligators grow so mean, there lived a girl that I swear to the world made the alligators look tame. Poke salad, Annie. Poke salad, Annie. Everybody said it was a shame, cause her mama was a wicked on a chain gang. A mean vicious woman. Every day for supper time, she'd go down by the truck patch and pick her mess of poke salad and carry it home in a tote sack. Poke salad, Annie. The gator's got your granny. Chomp, chomp, chomp. Everybody said it was a shame, cause her mama was a wicked on ting ding. A wretched, spiteful, straight razor tote moment. Lord, I'm gonna pick my mess up.
Welcome back. James Bostic here, conservative perspective. Tony Joe White, Poke Salad Annie. That's the guy that wrote Poke Salad Annie. Of course, it was immortalized by Elvis a couple of years later, but I would submit this. The only reason Elvis put it on the map is because when he sung it, he imitated Tony Joe White. You listen to those two versions, you listen to the recorded version, a more orchestrated version on Elvis's side where Tony Joe was playing it lean. But that's what he did. I've listened to both of them a million times, and the reason that record is the way it is because Tony Joe White sang it the way it should have been sung, and Elvis, entertainment genius that he was, had the good sense to recognize it, and he just went along with it, and blammo, another gold record. Tony Joe White, ACP here. Welcome, Tuesday night. We're live Tuesdays and Thursdays, 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And throwing in extra shows now, you know, here is the time of the quarantine. And I should have been doing it all along, really. I have plenty of time because I really don't do too much in the evenings. And Mark is doing a morning show now. He's going to be on, as a matter of fact, tomorrow morning. He's going to be on, I think, at 10:30, Patriot Nation Radio Network, Patriot Nation Radio Live. This Thursday, kind of excited about this. In a much ballyhooed and long overdue return visit, we've got our friend, my brother, Gary Binford, visionary by Nation Savers 2020. He's going to be back with us at around the 8 o'clock hour, I think. is what we agreed about. Gary, send me another thumbs up if that's what we said. But he's going to be calling in around 8 o'clock, and we're going to be talking. I think he's hopefully, if he can be persuaded to, he's going to finish out the last hour with us, and we're just going to hang. Terrific guy. You're going to be seeing some great things out of Gary Benford here in the next couple of years, I predict. He's moving into the speaker circuit, and he's going to make a name for himself because the guy's got what it takes, and he's moving in the right circles. And we can say we knew him when? But Thursday night, I think at 8 o'clock, hopefully, you know, whenever he wants to get in here, it'll be Gary Benford with us, and I'm happy about that. Whoa, General Flynn, Mike Flynn, you know, we said that this thing, this China virus deal has cast a very long shadow. And the news people have used it as a club. Folks are held hostage in their homes. And the news people in the media, they know this, see? So what are they doing? Well, you know what they're doing. CNN, MSNBC, these guys, you know, it reminded me when I was a boy. I'm going to get off this and we're going to move on to. When I was a boy, in the late 60s, early 70s, I can remember CBS News with Walter Cronkite. That's the way it is. Monday, April 15th, 1981. And when they would talk about the news of the Vietnam War, and for many years, you know, that cast a giant shadow across the country, too. Down in the bottom corner, at some point, somewhere on the screen, would be a little graphic, a little bug, a little chyron there, showing how many people died in Vietnam that day, how many had been wounded, how many we thought had may have been taken prisoner or reported as missing based on various patrols and actions that were going on inside the country. And that's what these guys did with the coronavirus. Is it an important part of the story? Well, yes, it is. If we have a virus that's going through the country and they're saying that it is a killer, but it kills no one, and this is the exaggeration, we know the China virus has killed people. Okay, then we got a problem. They're overreacting. And when they take those numbers and they hype them, again, America, 392 million people in the United States. They're manipulating people. There are people that are buying into this. There are people who are looking to these folks, like I said, for truth, for the straight dope. They're counting. Because that's what we did in the old-timey days. You know, Walter Cronkite was a screaming, bleeding heart liberal from the get-go. Not compared to today's standards, but in the definition of left-wing at that time, for 35, 40 years ago. And when he said something, people took it to heart. And not that he was called the most trusted man in America for a reason. Who do you trust in the media? You trust Sean Hannity? Trust Glenn Beck? Maybe. Trust Rachel Maddow? You trust Stephanopoulos? Trust that socialist bastard Lawrence O'Donnell? Who do you trust in the media? You pick a name, okay? You pick a name. And when you see that name, you see that face. When you look at them, do you see objectivity? Do you see impartiality in a journalist? And I'll tell you straight up right here, whatever I say, do not take my word for it. Go out and check. That's what I do. And in the course of my going out and checking, you know, I might have made a mistake. I have a couple of times, and when I drop the ball, I'm usually pretty good about owning it when I'm aware of it. Who do you trust? Well, let's get on with Mike Flynn, now that I've said that. There's been some, you know, the guy was railroaded by James Comey, and he played a central, pivotal role, a seminal role, in how this thing started against the president with Spygate. Maria Bartiromo has been on top of this stuff, and she's been pretty informed of it. And we got a couple of clips. We're going to start with that one as soon as I find it. Mary, honey, B.A., oh, okay, right. We're going to start with that, and then we're going to move on. Tucker Carlson has some stuff to say about this as well. Here it is. I'm not exactly sure who she's talking to here. I think it's either going to be Devin Nunes or it's going to be Doug Collins. I can't remember. Anyway, this is from Sunday. Marita Bartiromo on what's happening in these explosive new revelations concerning General Mike Flynn and his being railroaded by James Comey and the rest of Hydra.
It's going to be a critical week for General Michael Flynn. I tweeted this out yesterday. Breaking news. My sources tell me that he will be completely exonerated this week. Here's what Ranking Intel Committee member Devin Nunes said yesterday on Sunday Morning Futures about this. And then I want to get your take on the news behind Michael Flynn. Watch this. I know this upcoming week is going to be an important one for General Michael Flynn. What can you tell us?
In that FISA report, we need everything declassified so that we can continue this investigation. Why is General Flynn important? Because on Friday night, thankfully, Attorney General Barr has appointed a U.S. attorney out of Missouri to look into, you know, what was going on in some of these investigations. And now we don't know what was submitted to the court on Friday evening. But we believe that it's possibly exculpatory evidence that the government had on General Flynn.
But what I do know, Congressman, is that those documents are exculpatory evidence. They were not shown to the court initially, and basically what they say are they are notes about Michael Flynn's meeting at the White House with the FBI, that it was a complete setup and that he never lied. It's all in Mr. Baker's notes. That's the exculpatory evidence. Do you believe that Michael Flynn will be exonerated this week? What do you know about this?
Well, this goes back to something you and I have been talking about for a long, long time, and it's about time that some of this comes out. And this is why when people hear us talk about the FISA court, when they hear us talk about the corrupt cabal of Comey, Strzok, Page, McCabe, all of them in that situation, they're understanding why this is important. That Brady evidence, that exculpatory evidence, is things that prosecutors must turn over. And what we found here is that when you take Carter Page, Papadopoulos, now Flynn, and you start looking at this and putting the case together. Sidney Powell, the new attorney for General Flynn, has done a great job of pointing out the problems that we have seen. And what makes me think that this is even more important for maybe a possible dismissal or a major movement in this case is that when you're dealing with ineffective counsel assistance, which was his first attorney's, and that is being looked into, and I even saw a report that they're actually looking at possibly interviewing those previous attorneys. That tells me that this case is moving forward, and your U.S. Attorney Jensen, who has been appointed to look at this, is going to have plenty of evidence and plenty of ways to look and see if there was a problem with the interview. Remember, Peter Strzok did this interview. This was a time in which Comey knew that he could have free reign because it was in the early stages of the transition of the president coming into office. This is nothing more than an unveiling and unpeeling that we've talked about, you and I have talked about many times before, of ex-corrupt cabal wanting to get candidate Trump and then President Trump. This is nothing more than confirmation of what we've seen before.
That's right. And we will see when this plays out. I understand it will play out this week. But the exculpatory evidence showing that it was, in fact, a trick to get him. You know, Jim Comey has spoken about this before, right, Congressman? Remember when Jim Comey was out on his book tour and he said something like, well, we knew that it was a chaotic administration and any other administration, it wouldn't fly. But with this, we just said, hey, Mike, we want to talk to you. Don't bring a lawyer. We'll send a couple of agents down there just to chat you up. And that's exactly what they did and cornered him. And then later, they some of them said, no, I don't think he lied. But in fact, that's what they charged him with. You made a really good point to me when we spoke about this earlier. They initially charged him with colluding with the Russians. Yeah. And yet they ended up bringing charges about him lying. So there was no collusion in the charge.
No. In fact, this is what the media and all the pundits who want to tie this administration to Russia, which, by the way, has been found false at every level. This president did nothing wrong. And then Flynn here, look, I'm so sick of Jim Comey and Captain America here. There's so many cracks in his shield, and he goes around, maybe he'll go point and do another tweet about trees, because he has so misled the American people about what it is to be a prosecutor, what it is to be an FBI agent. Because when you look at this, when you look at what's happening, people need to be concerned that here was a man who was in charge who could destroy people's lives. And he said, let's use the chaos to find something we don't like about this president. And again, you're right. They did not charge him with colluding with Russia. They charged him with lying to the FBI, who came in, it seems to be now under a false pretense, to get something on him. This is just disturbing. When you talk about the FISA court reissuance, when you talk about the issue of how they were using, turning over exculpatory evidence, every citizen in the United States right now could be concerned that at one point, when you had Comey and McCabe and Strzok and Page and all of them running it, that we had a rogue group that was out on their own to take down a candidate and then to take down a president. This has been very disturbing. And the more it's revealed, it's just sad for where we're at. But it's also important for us to not give up the fight for the FISA court. When we reauthorize it, it has to have changes to it. It cannot just be rubber stamped to continue to do what it's doing, because these investigations show that there was a lot of problems. And General Flynn this week, it'll be interesting to see what happens with this, because this is important stuff. This is things that are basic 101 for prosecutors. Yeah. And what Comey and Strzok and them did is just bad.
Yeah, it's just extraordinary. We'll see if this begins a domino effect where we actually will see the cabal of individuals who tried to stage a coup, that they will face accountability and justice. Congressman, it's always a pleasure to see you. Thank you so much.
Great to be with you. Take care.
Big stuff. Big stuff. So he was set up by rogue agents through the FBI. And like I said, you know, the only reason he pled guilty, as most of you know, they were shaking down his son and they threatened to go after him. The guy's lost his fortune. He's lost his home. He had to sell all his crap off so he could pay off his lawyers to stay, just to plead guilty. These conspirators, these traitors, these Hydra agents, had absolutely no second thought. They had no feeling. They had no sense of remorse. They probably didn't even twitch when it came down to the saying, hey, we're going to crush you. We're going to crush your family. We're going to crush your son. We're really going to crush your son. And we're going to make you watch us crush your son. Give us what we want. We don't care if you're lying. We don't care that you didn't do it. We want you to say you did it. And we want something on Trump. Talk to your lawyers. They'll say the same thing. And these guys, he had crooked lawyers who were in with the FBI, and they probably got dangled some money. You know what? It might be a good – you guys might find some good work with the FBI. You talk Flynn into giving us something on Trump? Okay. Or maybe it was – talk Flynn into giving us something on Trump, and we won't crush you like we're going to crush him. Why was the FBI investigating General Flynn? There's never really been a good answer to that question, and it's always been a big problem for current and former government officials whose actions in these blatantly politicized probes of the Trump campaign and its surrogates. You know, the Justice Department's looking into it now. Well, that question and the lack of satisfactory answer are likewise at the root of some stunning disclosures that the Justice Department has just made to General Flynn and his new legal team, Sidney Powell. And Sidney Powell has taken this thing. I mean, this is when this is over, and Bert Rummel says she expects Flynn to be exonerated. We've got some stuff from Tucker Carlson, a clip we're going to run here in a minute on that, too. When this is over, it could be that what we see with Mike Flynn, because she has brought this thing up from the dust, this could be the greatest comeback since Lazarus. So even when the government is doing the right thing, you can rest assured that the Friday afternoon document dumps, and you know what that is. Both sides do it. you got some stuff you're not really crazy about getting out to the public, but you got to. You do it on a Friday afternoon. Everybody's sick of work. They're going home. They're getting pizza. They're turning on Netflix. They're not watching too much news on a Friday night. That gives them a couple of days to get through it. Once they got a couple of days and they jump through the other side of that window, we disclosed all that a couple of days ago. I'll just refer you to that. And it's over. So last Friday night was no exception, even here in the middle of the pandemic. And like I said, usually when they do those document drops, it's because of information that would prove to be embarrassing for the officials that are involved. And so last Friday night, the Department of Justice provided some so-called Brady material. And Brady material is a reference to a case, but what it has to do with is there any exculpatory information that prosecutors have. In other words, any information they have that through the course of their investigation may indicate that their suspect may not be that suspicious. After all, they are required by law to reveal to the defendant and the defense team, and the defendant has been charged with these crimes. Well, this particular set of documents, these Brady documents, have been demanded by Sidney Powell for months now. And the information's still not public because it has been produced under a court order that keeps it under wraps, at least for now. But we can glean from its outlines, and we'll probably know more about this tomorrow or Thursday. If it may be out there now while we're talking about it. But we can glean from the outlines from a motion that Ms. Powell filed immediately afterward in federal court in the District of Columbia. And it's in that court in the district there that she's been trying to convince Judge Emmett Sullivan to vacate Flynn's guilty plea, the plea that the FBI coerced out of him, and throw that case down, so get rid of that because of the amount of prosecutorial misconduct that's gone on. So in this particular motion, she argues that this new information, that these documents that they have, prove Mr. Flynn's allegations of having been set up and framed. And, you know, this evidence is finally being communicated to her. And this goes back, okay? This goes back. There's no crime, and there never was. And this goes to the point that many, many people have been pressing for a long time now, that there wasn't any reason at all for any kind, there was no good faith basis for an investigation of General Flynn. Now, under federal law, a false statement made to investigators is not actionable unless it is material. And what that means is it's got to be pertinent to whatever that matter is that's, you know, under investigation. So if the FBI didn't have a legitimate investigative basis to interview General Flynn, then that fact should have been disclosed as exculpatory information. It would have allowed his counsel the opportunity to argue that any inaccurate statements that he made were immaterial. So we're right on time. Okay, I tell you what we'll do. What we'll do now is we'll move on with this. I'll go ahead and set this clip up because I'm not exactly sure how long it's going to be. But we'll go ahead and do Tucker Carlson and some of the things that he has. His is more recent. I think it comes from last night. Come on, Tuck, where you at, boy? Trying to run away from me. You can't run away from me. I'm going to find you. And maybe I won't find him. I thought he was in there. But apparently not. Daggone it, man. It's just one of those days, I guess. All right, here it is. Never mind. Found it. It was Tucker Carlson.
One of the most bewildering facts of our current moment is how quickly everything moves. For example, do you remember the latest New York Times hit piece on Brett Kavanaugh? The one where they found a brand new accusation of sexual misconduct, but then later had to admit it was all a sham. When did that happen? It feels like about a year ago, but actually, no, it was just last week. That's the Trump-era news cycle for you. Scandals that used to go on for months now seem to end in hours. Nothing illustrates that better than this bizarre Ukraine story that we're all living through. So a week ago, no one had even heard of it. Last night, we were on the brink of impeachment because of it. And now, it seems to be over already. Just to bring you back and remind you what just happened, the same angry news anchors who brought you Stormy Daniels and the Russia hoax.
And this apparently I'm bringing you the wrong clip. That's not even what in the hell. Well, it's just that kind of day. Found it. Never mind. Here we go. Whoopsie.
We have new reporting tonight on the case of General Michael Flynn. Flynn, you'll recall, once ran Defense Intelligence, and the president was elected in 2016, and Flynn became the first national security advisor. He was also the first Trump official to tumble from office in disgrace. It was just days into the administration. His crime was allegedly lying to FBI agents about a phone call with the Russian ambassador. The details seem irrelevant now. They were always irrelevant. But Flynn pled to a felony, mostly because the Fed threatened to charge his son with unrelated crimes unless he did. His lawyers were busy sucking up to the special counsel's office and did not do a capable job of defending him. Flynn wasn't just forced out of office, though. As noted, he was criminally charged. Then he was financially ruined. He was publicly humiliated to sell his house and leave the state. That seemed to be the end of things, except it was not the end of things. Flynn still has not been sentenced, and he's now fighting to have the entire case against him thrown out. His guilty plea vacated is the word they use. Last Friday, his legal team successfully compelled the Department of Justice to file new court documents in the case. Here's what they found. According to Flynn's attorney, Sidney Powell, those documents contain exculpatory evidence for the general, and not just evidence that Flynn was innocent. It's far more damning than that. The evidence, Powell says, shows that the FBI was plotting, and that's not an overstatement apparently, from the very beginning to entrap Flynn, and they said it out loud in internal communications. According to Powell, quote, since August 2016 at the latest, partisan FBI and DOJ leaders conspired to destroy Mr. Flynn. These documents show in their own handwriting and emails that they intended either to create an offense they could prosecute or at least get him fired, end quote. Now, there are about five pages of documents apparently in question. They are not classified. They're only held from public view because of a judge's order. We're hearing tonight that they could be released as soon as tomorrow, and we hope so. We'll find out then whether this is true. If it is true, that would be good news, of course, for General Flynn. But for the rest of us, it would mean that the FBI has been shockingly corrupt and politicized, and that behavior would almost certainly require criminal charges and an overhaul of the organization. Andy McCarthy is a former federal prosecutor, author of the book Ball of Collusion. He joins us tonight. Andy McCarthy, thanks so much for coming on. So I spoke to two people today who have seen the documents, and both of them have a position on this, I'll say, though we'll find out very soon whether they're telling the truth or not. But both of them characterized it essentially in the same way. One of them said, and I'm quoting, and has been in this business a long time, I've never seen a clearer-cut case of entrapment than this one. If that's true, wouldn't it be a crime for the FBI to withhold that information under Brady from the defense in Flynn's case?
At the very least, Tucker, it's an illegality. Whether it's actually a crime depends on whether they made affirmative representations to the court that turn out not to be true. But for sure, there's a lot of things that are obviously not legal that are not in the penal code. But let's start with it's an illegality and a serious abuse of power, for sure.
So the FBI has known about this. Chris Wray has run the place for years now. Why wouldn't this information have made its way to Flynn's defense team or to Flynn himself before he pled?
Tucker, when they took his plea, they tried to do it in a way that was structured not to have to fulfill – their Brady obligations. It's pretty common in a plea agreement that it's explicitly written into it that once you plead guilty, you waive your right to ask for any discovery from the government. And I think that's what they've hidden behind this entire time. The problem they had was they ran into a judge who didn't think that was an enforceable provision. So as a result, they've been on the hook to produce the discovery. And the discovery puts them in a humiliating light, and they obviously haven't wanted to produce it. But you know, to just go to the point that you opened with, I've had many cases involving witnesses where you have a recorded conversation, as happened with General Flynn. If you're not trying to entrap someone or you're not trying to bring them into a perjury trap, what you simply do, especially I would think if you were dealing with a 33-year heroic combat veteran, a commander of the United States, what you would do is you bring him in, you play the tape, and then you ask him, what did this mean? What did that mean? If you bring him in under circumstances where you have the tape and it doesn't need explanation and you're asking him what was said, I can't conceive of any reason to do that other than to hope that he'll get it wrong and then you have a basis to say that he made false statements. I just, you know, having done this a very long time, I can't wrap my brain around that.
Well, if Peter Strzok, who, as we know, it has been proved, is an open partisan, is the one conducting the interview, doesn't that suggest that maybe there was a political motive here?
Well, I thought there was a political motive all along, Tucker, because as I asked when at the time that General Flynn was terminated, which was, I guess, February of 2017, when he was ousted as Trump's national security advisor, what was the good faith factual basis for conducting this investigation? I don't see any evidence of a crime. I don't see any evidence of any reason to treat this guy as a criminal defendant. So this is pretty blatantly political to me from the start.
It sure seems that way. Andy McCarthy, I hope you'll come back. We're about to find out a lot more about this story. Good to see you.
Sure will, Tucker. Thank you.
Wow. But here's the thing, and obviously, you know, will justice be served? I mean, based on the evidence that we're seeing right now and in this political climate, more and more of it seems to be confirmable. Are we going to see some justice? Are we going to see some justice delivered here? I don't know. I mean, the guy lost. He lost everything. He lost it all. Are they going to give him his money back? Are they going to give him a house? Are they going to give him his house back? I mean, who knows how many years the stress and the tension have taken off this guy's life, off his wife's life. You know, is there going to be any restoration for this guy? It's iffy. Will it be true restoration? Will he be made whole? No. Never again. Maybe a book deal? Maybe a movie? Which, you know, would make a great story because he's a heroic figure and you got a bunch of snidely whiplash types running through the Department of Justice. I mean, it would be a great thing. It's a great story. It's a heartbreaking and compelling story, and it makes you sick to your stomach at the corruption that Hydra has unleashed within the halls of power in Washington, D.C. And it's been going on for decades, man, Democrat or Republican. Hydra transcends. So this may be something that we touch base on with, you know, on Thursday. We'll be talking about that again, 8 o'clock hour. Our guest, our good friend, Mr. Gary Binford, is going to be with us, visionary behind Nation Savers 2020, and without a doubt in the podcasting business, one of the most solid wingmen I've ever had. But he hits me before each show, gives me a thumbs up. We go through a flight check. Sometimes he passes on something. He's always right there. and we're going to have him with us on Thursday. I think it's at 8 o'clock, and that's going to be a great time. Hopefully, we can talk him into staying the whole hour with us. I think we'll go ahead. We're going to knock out a little bit early tonight. Great show. I had a good time talking with you guys this evening. Apparently, everything worked out for the best. Got a few things out of my system. Feel a little bit better about that. Tomorrow morning at 10:30, you know, if you've got the time, you're out there somewhere, and you've got access to a device that you can catch up with him, check out Mark Hoffman, Patriot Nation Radio Live, tomorrow, 10:30 a.m. Don't want to miss that guy. I haven't talked to Blapo in a while. I need to touch base with him. That's about all the time. That's about all the time I'm going to give tonight. We're done. We'll be back on Thursday for sure, taking a look at things as we do through a conservative's perspective. Maybe a Friday show, maybe a Saturday show. Not real sure. Just depends on how things work out. I had a lot of fun with that. So we're going to be expanding while I have this opportunity to expand, since I'm not doing anything. Thanks so much for listening. You can check us out on we changed the name, by the way. The name of it used to be Talk America Radio West Virginia. It's now Mojo 50 Radio West Virginia. We're the West Virginia affiliate, with our show being on there Sundays, 4 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Check out that page, Mojo 50 Radio West Virginia. Also check out Cowboy Logic, Restoring America Forum. Friends Don Newman and Donna Fiducia. We're going to get Donna on the show here soon. Friends Don Newman, Donna Fiducia, great platform. A Conservative Perspective, our original page, and then the podcast archive page. I've gone back to taking the Sunday show once it gets uploaded to the Mojo folks, and we're taking that to podcast or Podomatic again, and we'll be sending that out at the various places where we also promote the live show. We live in interesting times, and I'm sure we'll have some interesting things to talk about on Thursday. God bless you. God bless America. We'll see you then. You guys take good care.